You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 9th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Benghazi Industrial Complex and Kangaroo Court, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Charlie Pierce. I mean, I know we practically have to do that every week. Yeah. Believe it or not, Politico is calling it the Benghazi Industrial Complex now, too. So it's kind of making everybody tired and bored. So
it's doing its job. And someone wrote me a note or a comment or email or something this week saying he sort of gets why I repeat, why I beat
It's interesting. I have that email right now.
Good.
I was going to read two paragraphs of it. Let's just start right with that.
Okay.
It is from our friend Jonathan. Thank you for writing, Jonathan.
Do you want to tell people what the title of this podcast is?
The title of this podcast is A Great Point If It Were True.
Yes.
Which is what Dana Perino said to Eric Bolling when he tried to rewrite the entire calendar of the world to move the Benghazi attacks to before the 2012 election.
Yeah. Yeah.
A great point, if it were true.
If it were true.
And as Stephen Colbert said, you know, that's fair and balanced, a great point, if it were true.
If it were true.
Okay.
So.
Jonathan writes, and I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs from this.
All right.
Hey, guys, I've been a weekly listener for years and look forward to listening to the podcast every Monday afternoon at work. What finally inspired me to email was the convening of the select committee and the ramping up of what we'll call the Benghazi, industrial complex. And at the same time, I'd like to praise Driftglass for something he has been criticized for in the past, specifically his tendency to beat a topic or point he is trying to make to death. What you two understand better than most is why the right-wing noise machine is so successful. Constant repetition, doubling down whenever you are attacked, and feeling safe in the comfort of knowing that no matter what you say, you will never be called to account for it. And then he goes on to say that he, like you, will spend his commute time listening to right-wing radio just to know your enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he points out that Limbaugh and Levine and all of the people on right-wing radio repeat the same message for 3 hours and then pass the baton off to the next show.
Yes.
With only enough time to play a few ads for Goldline and LifeLock to scare senior citizens out of their Social Security and retirement money.
Every day.
And then Benghazi.
All day, every day. And then they hand it off to Fox, who runs it all night, every night, and they hand it back. Mm-hmm. This is one of the many dead horses that I beat.
Yeah, but as Jonathan points out, it really does work.
Yeah, and I am not attempting in my own humble way to replicate the evils of conservative machine.
Yeah, you're not trying to out Limbaugh. We're not trying to be left-wing hate radio.
No, and I don't believe in escaping consequences, and I do believe in engaging people who are willing to be engaged.
And correcting ourselves when we're wrong.
It is simply a fact that propaganda or information works only if you repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And the liberal ADHD tendency to skitter off in all directions every time there's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Blue Gal, what I'd like to talk about is why we didn't get single payer out of Barack Obama. And that's a fine conversation to have as the Benghazi bulldozers roll over everything you care about. Yeah. But the thing you care about is over here, so you don't care about that. The thing that the conservatives understand, because they are at core fascists, they're at core authoritarians who love taking orders from people in uniforms, even if those uniforms are Rush Limbaugh's jogging suit, is you stick to the fucking message. You toe the line. You toe the fucking line, to quote Malcolm. And there are four or five things that I believe are the bigger issues. Whatever it is you want to do, whatever it is you want to accomplish, whatever policy outcomes you want to see your government undertake, however corrupt you think the Democratic Party is, and I would agree with you 80% of the time, you will never get anything done until you burn the Republican Party to the ground. piss on its ashes and rebuild it from the ground up as an actual, genuine, conservative, small c, prudent, modest, careful, cautious movement. And that is never going to happen as long as they are in place with their own network and their own church and their own satellites and their own voter base and billions and billions and billions of dollars sluicing into them whenever they want it. So I keep my focus on simple things like they get nowhere without their centrist enablers. Yep. Every fucking time someone points out a Republican atrocity, there's always a Joe Scarborough or a David Brooks at the elbow to say, yeah, but liberals too. Every liberal argument is flushed down the toilet every time a conservative fucks up because there's a centrist in the middle of it to make sure that happens. And let me give you one little example of that. On the morning, on Squint and the Meat Puppet show.
Or as I call it, Morning Jehoshaphat.
Yeah, it's, and I just, you know, I skip past it in the morning to make sure the world hasn't blown up. You know, it's a news show. Like, oh, is anything splitting continents sink into the ocean? No, okay, we're fine. But I've noticed, like, the last several days in a row, It's been Keystone Pipeline whoring all the time.
All morning long.
And it's really, really nakedly obvious that this is what Joe Scarborough, in this particular block, is being paid to do.
Absolutely.
To pimp the shit out of it and to discredit and laugh at anybody who says anything to the contrary. So... And the reason I bring it up is in the tidal wave of misinformation and mocking that he and his little sort of panel of washed up media hacks that he uses to populate his set, Ed Rendell, who was, when I was governor, we fracked the fuck out of everything. It was great. And there's Mark Halperin. Yeah. And all of these stooges and hacks and even, you know, washed up relic Mike Barnicle that they pulled out of Skid Row, and his job is to sort of shrug his shoulders and go, but what about this alternative point of view, and then let the fucking conservative talk over it. That's his whole job. Yesterday it was, well, you know, the only alternative that liberals offer, the only alternative the other side offers to fracking everything right now and opening up the Keystone Pipeline was chewing on some granola at the base of a windmill. Now, I ask you, if he'd said flying a rainbow LGBT flag at a windmill, how fast do you think a house would have been fucking dropped on him? How fast do you think Mr. Roberts would have come across the desk and said, you said what now? What the fuck did you just say? But it is always safe to bash liberals on TV. Because everybody knows liberals are soft and squishy and stupid and don't know anything. So... And that's because, frankly, at least part of the reason is we can't focus our message enough to make them pay attention to us. We got it done in Iraq. Once everything actually blew up in exactly the way liberals said it would, for about 2 weeks, you could get a liberal. You could get Marcos Melitzis on television. And then that scared the shit out of them. They put that shit away. But until we stop trying to be a chorus all singing different tunes at different times and fighting with each other, and understand that however much we disagree with each other, until we obliterate the Republican Party, we're not going to get anywhere. Because you know why? The cost of a minimum wage discussion is now passing the XL pipeline.
Exactly.
Not increasing.
Unbelievable.
It, just discussing it. We're willing to discuss the possibility of changing the minimum wage from insulting to penurious. Maybe provisionally we'll discuss it if you agree to put the, as Charlie Pierce calls it, the continent-spanning death funnel right down the middle of our country so that we can fill up barrels of oil and sell it to China for jobs.
Which it's not going to create jobs. And I was so mad about that that I actually posted to my blog about it. I never write to my blog. They're also, along with Keystone, interested in offering amendments blocking regulations on coal.
Yeah.
And my counterproposal was, we let you pretend you're sort of not against the minimum wage hike because you stopped blocking it. That's the compromise. That's it. But this Keystone Pipeline thing, Driftglass.
Everybody.
And Mike Barnicle did say, well, you know, there are some ecological arguments about it. Oh, yeah, yeah. They moved the pipeline in Nebraska answer those.
He did what Alan Colmes used to be hired to do.
Yeah.
Well, what about these other concerns other people have? He said shruggingly, at which point the Canadian ambassador took it away. explain, oh, don't you worry. It was like watching an ExxonMobil commercial.
It was. And we answered those. We moved the pipeline away from the aquifers, so now it's okay. Not about burning sludge.
No, it was a commercial.
And spewing it into the air. That's not the conversation we're having. We're having a conversation about the location of the pipeline and the concerns that people had.
And posing the question that the person wants to answer is not journalism.
That's not journalism.
That's prostitution.
I do want to talk a little bit about that today.
Yes.
In addition to the great point, if it were true, it's the conversations that we in the media, I shouldn't say we,
but we
the conversations that we choose to have.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we're minimum wage hike. We're going to talk about XL pipeline to get something in addition, you know, in exchange for that. Lynn Cheney coming out and saying that Hillary Clinton planned the Monica Lewinsky interview.
Yeah.
What? Then,
you
know, Sarah Palin makes news this week with Chelsea's baby will make Hillary change her stance on abortion. We are going to have the GOP media trotting out women to say awful things, awful, awful things for the next 2 years.
Oh, and don't forget Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, yeah.
9/11 and the Benghazi attacks were caused by God.
God punishing us.
Punishing us, which is something that even Jerry Falwell was forced to apologize.
Yep.
But we've reached the point where it doesn't fucking matter how crazy it is.
Mm-hmm.
It will make a headline, it will make news, and it will drive the conversation in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And your job, little liberals out there, is to force the conversation back into the right direction.
And that requires two things, discipline and confidence.
Yes.
And I really think one of the problems that we liberals have is
we don't have a Don Draper.
We have to have a big, long conversation about our right to have a conversation before we have a conversation.
Yes.
And so it becomes, can women be on the internet? How can environmentalists message better? No, clean water. That's it.
Yeah.
Clean air. That's how you message. Want. And it's not hard when the conversation that they choose to have is fracking, Keystone XL, and coal. We're going to lower EPA rulings on coal in exchange for minimum wage. Don't go off to some seminar somewhere on how to message or whether you have a right to be there or whether you can navigate the internet. Fuck that.
Stop it.
I did want to point out another victory in the Affordable Care Act, just as a side item.
Yeah.
Hospitals are making big changes to healthcare under the radar that we aren't paying attention to because who cares? We're so busy talking about the uninsured not deserving to have coverage.
Yeah.
Instead of talking about the uninsuring insurance companies who don't want to insure poor people.
Yep.
And we had to make them do it. The idea that we're talking constantly about the uninsured or the poor or states don't want to do it out of spite, instead of talking about let's improve healthcare for all Americans. That, you know, we don't have that conversation. And that's the White House's fault, and that's our fault. But the hospitals have changed dramatically how they do things because Medicare has changed the way they pay hospitals to punish them for infecting patients.
Ha ha!
If a patient comes back to the hospital with an infection that they got at the hospital, the hospital doesn't get paid much for that.
Then the next one's free.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much to the hospital. So the American Hospital Association is driving hospitals to have hand washing stations everywhere in the hospital.
Huh.
You have to wash your hands every time you see a patient, every single time. You have to wear new gloves every single time you see a patient, every single time. And the latest thing that I read in National Journal, the title of the article is, Are Hospital Patients Healthier Under Obamacare? Hospitals are no longer allowing mothers to deliver babies before they're due when that is optional. And apparently that was a thing, that they would just schedule births based on schedules rather than when the baby was going to come. If you deliver earlier, you have a higher likelihood of complications.
Yep.
There's a big increase in complications with inducing labor when it's just because you want to. You know, there are times when you really have to, and I understand that. But between 2010 and 2013, Driftglass, the rates of early elective births in American hospitals declined 64.5%.
Can I ask you a quick question, Blue Gal?
Yeah, yeah.
Did something happen between 2010 and 2013 to change that policy in any way?
It's that Obamacare.
Oh, my God. Now, here's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why can't we just let the marketplace decide whether or not doctors should wash their hands?
That's exactly what we're doing, Driftglass. The marketplace, which is Medicare, that's who's paying for a lot of hospitalizations.
That's big government nanny states forcing.
Turns out the payer is Medicare, and the payer has decided to tie hospitals' Medicare pay to infection and readmission rates and hospital-acquired conditions.
Look. So you're basically putting all of those antibiotics.
No, you're putting a gun to the head of hospitals
right.
and forcing them to not infect their patients.
Which
a germ.
Which, if you remember, the fifth element, every time you fuck something up and break it, you create a whole bunch of jobs. So essentially, nanny state big government is destroying some jobs in the economy that would have been created by hospitals generating sick patients.
And so we're not going to talk about patients being healthier. That's not the goal of medicine.
La, 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 la. La, 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 Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi Whitewater, Benghazi. Benghazi. Okay. This is the problem.
I want to say thanks, Obama.
I do, too.
Thanks, Obama.
I do, too. But you can see the cause and the effect. Mm-hmm. This is something that everybody I know online, every liberal I know, including the one I'm happily married to, saw coming down Michigan Avenue from a mile away.
Absolutely.
Okay, now that Obamacare is nothing, because remember, there was nothing but Obamacare for the last 2 years, 3 years, nothing. Death panel, blah, 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 blah. Nobody who has lied about this has paid any price for it, except they got promotions and raises.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Nothing has happened to anyone who's been promoting Obamacare myth, scaring the shit out of elders, screwing up elections by just lying constantly and getting paid for it. Nobody's paid any price for that. But now that the results are coming in and people actually know people who can tell you on a word of mouth basis, no, that's not true. My hospital is cleaning its act up precisely because Medicare is forcing them to.
Yep.
I got a checkup for the first time in 6 years. I got my thing fixed because I finally was able to afford insurance.
I don't now have to pay $700 for prescriptions in November because the donut hole.
Yeah.
That's done. Yes.
And,
right.
And now that those stories are undermining the great story, if it were true, tagline of Obamacare, the liars just shift the story. Now it's for a moment there, it was Clive and Bundy. You notice that Clive and Bundy has ceased to exist.
Yep.
The great hero of conservatism has literally been unpersoned in the most incredibly Stalinist way. He simply ceased to exist because he suddenly became horribly inconvenient. And now we're back to Benghazi. And it is simply the case that the same shithead pig people who fell for Obamacare, who fell for Acorn, will never pause for a moment to consider the fact they've been lied to.
Yeah.
They will never punish the people who lie to them. They will simply skip merrily on to the next convenient lie because they hate you.
Yep.
And they don't want you inside their White House telling them what to do. They want the Koch brothers running your country.
Yep.
And they want to be heavily armed, paranoid country full of 98% poor people, 2% rich people run directly by corporation. These people didn't give a shit about dead Americans when they were shoveling down the Iraq rat hole. These people didn't give a shit about presidential overreach when it was George Bush ruining this country. They are so completely fucking brainwashed. Now I'm talking to you, Bill Nye and Chris Hayes. Stop trying to engage with them as if they're not fucking robots, because that's all they are.
I did tweet Chris Hayes. He had the guy on from the National Gun Owners Association.
Yeah.
It was a short, he really did cut his mic. I mean, because what Chris Hayes was trying to do in that situation was resolve a problem. There's a problem with this New Jersey law that essentially removes other guns from the market as smart guns are brought in. Smart guns will only fire when the owner has a watch on. I'm abbreviating here a lot. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard this story.
A digital chip in the watch identifies them as the unique owner and activates the firing mechanism.
Right. Correct.
Yes.
And the woman from New Jersey, the state legislator from New Jersey, who seems to be on retainer over there at whenever Steve Kornacki is on, because she's just on constantly talking about Chris Christie. But she was on saying, look, we'll repeal this law and make it not be a replacement for existing guns if these two organizations, the NRA and the National Gun Owners Association, will back off and let gun retailers sell these guns instead of flooding their Facebook page with threats.
Death threats.
There were death threats. You know, of course, these organizations don't take responsibility for the death threats. But
no, they just say
the poor gun manufacturer who was going to sell it because Freedom and who called them out as hypocrites and said, you know, we're all always talking about they're going to take away our guns. And here is gun manufacturers saying, no, you can't sell this gun.
And all it took was 24 hours of death threats.
Yeah. And then he was
get him
drinking
to
and
toe the line
in his gun store
and got him
and set it on fire. Yeah.
And it put a leash on him and brought him to heel because that's how they operate. Yeah. That is exactly how they operate. And if you don't think whipping up a frenzy, if you don't think Bill O'Reilly saying killer the baby killer 500 times didn't help motivate someone to actually kill that man. Oh, that's not what I meant. That's not what I intended. Well, of course you didn't intend. You didn't draw a straight line between the two. You simply put down all the
markers.
All the Taliban-like justifications for it. Religion, social, moral, ethical. You put guns in their hands. You pointed them in the right direction. Then you absolved yourself of responsibility of everything that happened after that.
Yep.
So this guy
from the National Gun Owners Association was brought on the next night, and Chris Hayes offered up this compromise. Uh-huh. They will repeal the law that you hate.
Right.
That you say is preventing you from accepting these guns on the market.
Yes.
They'll do it, and they'll do what you've asked. They'll repeal this law.
You win.
They're putting a gun to our heads and telling us what to do. No way.
Yep.
And that is she was done. And so I want to say to Chris Hayes on the podcast what I said to him on Twitter, which is, all right, if you won't agree with us on having conservatives on your show, would you at least agree to us with us having lobbyists on your show to argue a point?
All right.
Is a bad idea. It is not a teachable moment.
They're all lobbyists.
You know, that's a good point.
They're all lobbyists. Yeah. You think Michael Steele, former head of the RNC, isn't a paid Republican shill?
Yeah.
You think David Frum, who suddenly got Jesus when it comes to immigration, who's a Canadian immigrant.
One of my commenters said that. Like, I love being lectured to about immigration by a Canadian.
By a Canadian whose job was to write glowing biographies about George Bush, to be a speechwriter for a while, then write glowing biographies about George Bush. That's all that David Frum brought to our fair shores.
And now, he wants only skilled workers to be brought into the United States. I'm like, David Frum, do you really want the competition?
David Frum, do you really? First of all, A, that's very Republican of you. Quick, close the door behind you.
Yeah.
And B, what exactly is your skill set that you brought to our country?
Yeah.
So
that we can't get locally sourced.
I'm sorry, Chris Hayes, but the time to cut this guy's mic was 5 minutes before he went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It is simply
because
useless.
They do not negotiate in good faith.
No.
And so, if it really is, we have this problem. And I do want to take a moment, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
And thank someone. There was during that exchange I was having on Twitter, there was a gentleman who tweeted to me on Twitter about guns. And he is a gun owner. He listens to Rush Limbaugh. His name is Gordon Shuckrow. He's an Irishman.
Oi.
And we had a very fruitful, respectful conversation on Twitter about gun ownership and gun laws and what should happen. And he wrote to me and said, I concede that you don't want to take my guns.
Uh-huh.
And you admit that I don't want more kids to die.
Yes.
Therefore, it's an easier conversation to have.
Yes.
And he brought up the point that existing laws regarding background checks are not being enforced. They're not being enforced in some cases by sheriffs.
Right.
I'm not going to put somebody in jail for selling a gun for background checks because he's my number one constituent. All my friends know him.
Yeah.
You know, so he said if we would enforce existing laws on and obviously there's the gun show loophole, which we did not get into discussing.
Uh-huh.
But the fact is that very often existing law is not being enforced, and people are not going to court or to jail for selling a gun illegally.
Well,
when they're a white friend of the sheriff.
Of course not, because we go duck hunting together.
Yeah.
And I know him. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to throw him in jail for, you know, a couple mistakes.
He didn't want those kids to get killed. He didn't want that accident to happen with the three.
I had a shotgun when I was 12. I don't see why, you know, and that's fine. Except you're not enforcing the law, and the whole premise of your discussion is based on the rigorous enforcement of certain laws. I, as you know, Blue Gal, I am a Second Amendment purist.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that any arms that existed prior to 1780, you have the right to keep and bear. But since that was when the Constitution was written and then later amended shortly thereafter, you don't have the right to own anything that was manufactured after, say, 1790.
Yeah.
Because the founding fathers, who were not science fiction writers, Ben Franklin probably was, but he was about the only one, could not possibly have contemplated the construction of weapons that would destroy a battleship or could take out a helicopter. Ergo, the right that they wrote down in the Constitution is not one of the rights they contemplated for you.
Even if that's a modest proposal, most members, on the ground members of the NRA, want background checks. It's not, this is lobbyists for gun manufacturers. I mean, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
This is very wealthy lobbyists for gun manufacturers taking an extreme position. And then you have sock puppets on Chris Hayes.
Well,
and again, it's the conversation that we choose to have.
And you notice, I believe I'm referring to the same conversation, once Chris Hayes led him into the area where, wait a minute, so you're objecting to the misfire rate.
Oh, yeah, well, that was it. These guns fail 20% of the time. What if a seatbelt failed 20% of the time? And Chris Hayes said,
so,
you mean you want to regulate guns the way we regulate car safety? Let's do that. Oh,
and
no.
And that's when they will beat a hasty retreat back to, you're trying to steal my guns. Because, hey, what's the misfire rate on collectible muskets?
Yeah. A lot.
So the idea that these people care about anything but selling the maximum number of lethal weapons to terrified idiots,
whether they work or not,
it's absurd.
Yes,
it's absurd. Yes. So, but that's the point. That is the starting point at which you should begin a conversation.
Yeah.
The beginning point is, can we both agree the NRA is run by paranoid lunatics who are trying to whip their customer base into a political frenzy for political
money
reasons and for money, and to sell the maximum number of lethal weapons irresponsibly to terrified, paranoid idiots? Can we agree with that? Because if we can't, we can't have a conversation. Because like climate change, that is simply self-evidently true. And if you can't agree that that is true, then you're arguing from a position of complete bad faith. And there's no point in debating, because what you're doing is not debating.
It's a great point if it were true, Driftglass.
Yeah, if it were true, it'd be fucking awesome.
I want to give you some good news, too. I want to share some good news, if you don't mind. This is just awesome. The Alabama got their comeuppance.
Yeah.
With HB 56, the anti-immigrant law, they got their comeuppance right away because people couldn't pick their peaches. You know, the farmers just...
That's not picking peaches is not a metaphor for anything, right?
That's right. No, it's literally picking peaches. Yeah, and blackberries. Alabama's farmers really suffered because of HB 56. But the interesting part to me is... this is from MSNBC's website. While it initially caused a panic among immigrant communities, judges ended up throwing out most of the toughest provisions of this anti-immigration bill, while public officials found others so unworkable that they stripped them out in later bills themselves. But the Southern Poverty Law Center got involved, which, let me tell you something, there isn't a worse named group than the Southern Poverty Law Center, because they're rich. They have made so much money off of the Klan and closing down the Klan and wrongful death cases. But
bless their hearts.
Great work. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Southern Poverty Law Center sued the state of Alabama because one of the provisions of the law said that if you lived in it made it a felony to interact with state and county government officials without proving your immigration status. However, mobile home residents were required by the government to pay an annual fee and register their mobile home. So there were two, the law was conflicting. And you were either going to break the law by not registering your mobile home, or you're going to break the law by not proving your immigration status. And SPLC sued, and said it violated the Fair Housing Act, which it did. But here's the point that I thought was very funny. The federal judge that issued the initial temporary injunction stopping this provision on the mobile homes did so in part because the debate over the law's passage was laced with derogatory comments about Hispanics.
Yeah. Because they can't help themselves.
They can't help themselves. Uh-huh. And this is what is happening, too, in the voter ID laws. Uh-huh. Is you're having committee meetings where people are saying, yeah, because we don't want students to vote.
Right. Well, if I could just pause for a moment, Blue Gal, and let me tell you about the Negro.
What you know about the Negro?
What I know about the Negro. And again, that, you know, every comedian in the world. You know what? Here's a thought. If the sentence begins...
Yeah, well, that's what Obama said at the dinner.
Yeah, let's maybe you're off on the wrong foot. But again, let me bring this back to public policy and the Clinton playbook from the 90s.
Yes, this is Driftglass repeating himself again with the Clinton playbook of the 90s.
Yeah. Well, and it's very well. It actually goes back to the Southern strategy, Nixon's Southern strategy. The whole predicate for getting gun fetishists, not responsible gun owners, but paranoid gun fetishists, militia types, Bible fundies who insult Jesus every time they open their fucking mouths. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Losing you again.
How about here?
No.
Better?
No. Yeah, I don't know. It might be that plug in the base of your microphone might be a little loose. You might just make sure that's all the way in.
Okay.
All right. No, you
sound good. It won't be the first time that I've been told jiggle it and make sure it's all the way in.
So. Hey, speaking of that.
Yeah. What? Suddenly, things took a very sharp, weird turn that is not in our podcast notes.
Not in our podcast notes. But I have been wondering about this. And, you know, I know that you have a lot more worldly experience than I do. But I really did. I do really am curious about this. Why do they call strip clubs deja vu?
I have no idea.
Deja vu means already seen. Isn't the point of a strip club to go and see boobs that you haven't seen before?
Maybe it's view. Maybe it's a play on the word view.
Okay.
Why do they call the bar that I used to go to Shalimar? I don't know.
I mean, the strip club here in Springfield is called Deja Vu.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm sure that very few people walking into that strip club think, yeah, maybe I shouldn't come here because deja vu means already seen. So
no. Well, see, you're operating under the wholly false premise that having seen that set of breasts once, I would never want to see it again.
I want to see only new ones.
Only new breasts for me. No.
There's but you know what you can do then? You can go Wednesdays. And the only reason I know this is it's across from the pharmacy where I get junior dudes medications, but
okay.
Wednesday is amateur night.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Literally amateur night. I mean, literally in the Joe Biden sense.
Literally
amateur night at the Deja Vu Strip Club. Everybody
right.
Come on down to Springfield, Illinois.
I'm sensing a field trip. just strictly for investigative purposes. I have been to a club or two in my time where people were in various states of undress, and I have no idea why they call themselves. It's usually scandals or murmurs or my favorite little motel. Mm-hmm. I never stayed there, but the best name for a motel was in the south suburbs of Chicago near where I used to live, called the Covert Motel. Seriously, literally true.
They have nap rates.
They had nap rates. And you know, on America's highways and byways, on the blue highways, on all the roads that were replaced by interstate highways, you'll see this in Chicago along Lincoln Avenue, on the north side of Lincoln Avenue, a lot of old motels, Route 66 motels and so forth, that were really unique and interesting. And some of them have been restored. A lot of them have been bulldozed. A lot of them are meth houses, are awful rundown crack house kind of places. Yeah. But I'm sure the Covert Motel is one of those. And how I can walk this back to the Clinton playbook of the 90s is probably via Monica Lewinsky. So
yeah, that's true.
The idea that there's this sort of unstoppable conversation happening outside of the I'm going to use this phrase again, even though one of our listeners said I shouldn't. the tribe that rubs shit in its hair. Yeah. They have a clubhouse, and for years and years, it was the job of the establishment of the Republican Party, the brain cast of the conservative movement, to keep the gun fetishists and the fundies and the bigots inside the fucking basement.
Mm-hmm.
You can vote all you want, you can talk amongst yourself, but do not talk to the press. Now, that message was directly contradicted by the other message of the Republican Party, is that everything you believe, every paranoid fantasy you have, all of your bigotries are in fact patriotic. You should embrace them. The government really is out to get you. The black president really did become president because of the new Black Panther Party. Acorn really did steal your votes. Barack Obama really is palling around with terrorists. Bill Clinton really did have Vince Foster killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've encouraged this bottom quartile of the American gene pool to be ever louder and more proud and more clear and more outspoken in their stupid, stupid, stupid beliefs, all while telling them, but make sure you don't tell anybody about it.
Right.
And they've lost the ability to control themselves in public.
Yeah.
So they start writing this shit into the law. They start talking about it on camera because they don't know that it's wrong or crazy because the Republican Party has told them for 30 fucking years that talking about
you're
the
a patriot, pro-America.
Exactly. Yes, you love the Negro.
Yeah.
You know, you're superior to them, but you love them. And the idea that is so horridly offensive. I'll quote Matt Taibbi once again, his wonderful Tea Party thing called Tea and Crackers, where the thing that astounded him was the people he talked to had no fucking idea how clueless and hateful and bigoted they sound, because it just didn't occur to them that anybody would be offended by the shit that was pouring out of their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. They don't know any better. They are a separate, inbred, cut-off tribe living in this larger country. And they literally don't know any better anymore that they're not supposed to say shit like that in public.
Not only that, but they don't know any better than to live off the government largesse.
Yes.
With their disability payments and their Medicare scooters.
And their stolen grasslands and their free cattle grazing. But that's okay, because I'm white and
I'm
old,
white.
But I deserve this.
Yes, I earned this. Yes, yes.
So,
one last thing, got a letter from one of our longtime listeners, and he says, that he read the article about, the exercise for eighth graders in California to debate the Holocaust and whether it happened or not. When tragic events occur in history, there is often debate about their actual existence. For example, some people claim the Holocaust was not an actual historical event, but instead is a propaganda tool that was used for political and monetary gain. Students are required to cite textual evidence in the assignment and address rebuttals to the claims they make themselves.
Uh-huh.
Explain whether or not you believe the Holocaust was an actual event in history. And someone immediately pointed out to them, you realize that you are sending students to Holocaust denial website.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, they're going to Google this. Did the Holocaust exist?
You are teaching them.
Immediately.
You are teaching them that there is a controversy.
Right.
There is no controversy.
There is no controversy.
The people who debate this are awful, awful people who should be shut away from polite society forever.
Yep. And one of our listeners had a really smart comment about that. I think that this both sides on the Holocaust thing is an inevitable outcome of both-siderism.
Oh, yeah.
How far is it truly from evolution denialism to climate change denialism to Holocaust denialism? If a teacher has to treat evolution and climate change as both sides need to be considered, then why not our actual history? Why not the calendar? Why not whether it's day or night? Why, you know?
Why not? Well, I mean, Paul Krugman.
Yeah.
Shape of the Earth, flat or round, opinions differ. That is the reflex action that you are required to have to be on television, because your job is to be as inoffensive and as neutral as possible.
Yes.
And neutrality, as Hunter Thompson said, the objective journalism was Richard Nixon's friend because he looked good on paper.
Yeah.
You had to come at him subjectively to understand what a vicious, amoral, criminal monster he really was. And so the people who get jobs on television, who control our public debate, including, sadly, people on my liberal TV, are almost required to pretend that no matter what happens, and one side has figured this out.
Mm-hmm.
One side has figured out, oh, you mean no matter what the fuck I do, you're going to go slap a liberal? Ah, yeah. Great. Yeah. That's great. Right. Awesome. I hate them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sure, I'll do horrible things and I can rely on David Gregory to find a hippie somewhere and punch him for balance.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I want to see them suffer. I'm willing to suffer. I don't care because nothing's going to stop me. But I can bring them down by being an asshole. That's great. Where do I sign up?
Yeah, and I want to just say that, first of all, California did pull this. The school did pull this from the curriculum, and this project did not go forward for the eighth graders. But I was thinking of it as a middle school history teacher, which I am.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just bet that this was a debate class or a writing nonfiction unit or whatever, and it became this multidisciplinary thing where they had to jam a history component into it. And so, well, we'll put in the Holocaust because that's history.
Yeah.
And then it went terribly wrong.
Yeah.
But I used to do a lesson plan about the German people and how does anybody get convinced to follow Nazis, for God's sake?
Uh-huh.
And I found a way. I was really sneaky, drift class. I found a way to bring in 9/11 and Iraq into the conversation.
Really?
What do people do when they're scared or hungry or terrified or the future looks really bleak? They do really stupid stuff.
Uh-huh.
They do things that are counter to fact or their own hearts. And I'm not forgiving the German people for Nazism at all. But when you're told then by Fox News, and again, breaking Godwin's law here, I really am. But when people are scared, and I brought this up, you know, what the economy of Germany was like after World War One, and then we got into how fascism works, and we have all the answers for you. You know, there's a really good lesson plan to have on the Holocaust and finding one group of people to blame for all your problems. And I also want to quote my father, if you don't mind. My dad in his old age, has come to the conclusion, and he says this to me often, some people are just dumb.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to quote the late, great Molly Ivins,
mm-hmm.
that there's some things they're so bad, they scare you so bad, they make you hurt yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what, and people who deliberately trigger that reflex,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
deliberately poke at it and poke at it and poke at it and make people feel constantly terrorized, constantly afraid, constantly paranoid, and then give them an enemy.
Yep.
An enemy that you can mock on television, mm-hmm. openly. You can call liberals assholes on television. You can call us un-American. You can call us boobs and fools, and you can get away with it. Still safe to call liberals stupid, America-hating assholes on network television and get away with it.
Yeah. And they're doing it on Morning Joe every day.
Every day on Morning Joe, liberals are a pinata you can beat out of which you will get oil.
Yep. And that's what we need is more tax-free profits for oil companies.
And speaking of vicious liberals who deserve nothing but condemnation.
Oh, yeah.
We want to congratulate Digby.
We do. Congratulations, Digby, on your Hillman Prize.
Way
that's
to go.
Awesome.
Yeah. A blogger finally got a prize.
Hey. That they didn't invent themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. I remember the liberal prizes we used to invent for ourselves.
Yeah, so, we should do that again.
The Koufax Awards. Anybody remember the Koufax Awards?
I do. You won one.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't? No. What did you win? A blogger award.
A blogger of the year award.
You did, yeah.
And after that was the year that Andrew Sullivan won for best blog.
Oh, okay.
And I won for best individual blogger.
Yeah. And you were always going against Lindsay Bayerstein and Digby every single thing.
Yeah. And that was the
nominated that year. I think it was you and versus that woman who thought that Bush was great.
Yes.
And she was kind of a nun or something.
She was kind of a nun.
Yeah.
And
she was a nice lady, but she was wrong about everything.
So Andrew Sullivan and I won the same award and he won't return my phone call. He won't answer my emails. He won't respond to my blog. And of course, that was the year that they terminated having that award. So,
Driftglass won, we got to stop.
Yeah. Oh, fuck that. Oh, no. Something's gone horribly wrong.
On that note, each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week, we have three internet kitties in one picture.
Really?
Aurora, Finnick, and Stella.
Ah.
And this is a great story. They are all orange kitties, but they are not related. Their human lost an orange cat to illness, and so three of her friends brought her orange kittens to make up for the loss.
Oh.
So they're all about 3 or 4 months apart in age, but Aurora, Finnick, and Stella make the best of it, and they are very good to share a sunny spot on the carpet. So good for them. I think the only cat that I've noticed that's friendlier than orange kitties is Black Kitty. They're just, but orange kitties are wonderfully friendly. And
I had a fine orange tabby for many years, and he was a perfect gentleman and a great cat. So
orange is a good color. Orange and orange and the new black. That was a funny joke the president told. Okay.
You're a funny man, Mr. President.
All right.
Yeah.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are looking forward to CNN's round-the-clock coverage of the House Select Committee on who killed the White House Travel Office houseplant.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right, Science Fiction University, we've got another one from Dogfaced Herman. Thank you for sending these, and we also want to thank very much Magnolia ePublishing has also sent us a number of these, and we appreciate both of you sending us these Science Fiction University audio clips. They're awesome.
They are. They're much more interesting than just listening to me drone on.
And this one, I think, is going to be hilarious. It might be really easy, but I think it's going to be fun.
Oh, good. Okay.
It is Dogfaced Herman has sent us old clips of Siskel and Ebert reviewing science fiction movies.
Oh, I remember them.
You're supposed to guess what movie they're talking about.
All right, jump right in. Number one.
Even the story, I didn't care about the characters. Okay. On the other hand, to look at the film, the set decoration, the design, the visual conception of this Los Angeles didn't get tired for me in 20 minutes. Okay. I felt as if I were being shown a world I hadn't seen before.
It was done by Ridley Scott, who made a similarly attractive looking film, an Alien, but at least they had a conventional pull-you-through-the-picture story there, a horror film. This film, I think, is a waste of time. Pretty to look at, but a waste of time.
Oh, that's Blade Runner.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's That really did set the standard for modern science fiction.
Apparently, they didn't like it very much, so that's kind of interesting.
And it is very, very loosely based on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? I mean, glad...
I've read that, and I read that after I saw Blade Runner, and the ending's a little different, and but it is based on it, no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, and the idea that the Earth is dying, mm-hmm. and people are being exported to the off-world colonies, and there's this whole religion that goes into it, and all that stuff is not in the really not in the movie. But I'm glad Philip Dick got a paycheck before he passed away, paycheck before he passed away, and it's an awesome movie. All 22 cuts of it are awesome too.
That is true. I think that's probably the most remade, re-released movie. Director's cut, director's cut 2, director's cut 7. Okay, number 2.
The character was a fascinating guy. Rather than playing this as a strong man, I thought it was interesting to show this guy as sort of conflicted and nervous about it, and that's why he goes into this big pose.
Well, that's a modern touch that I wasn't surprised about. I'll tell you this much about the film. It's a very, not only a dark film, which you're right about, a film noir, but also there's a great deal of hostility and anger in this film. There's a great deal of bad feeling in it. And it's not a film for children. You call it an adult film. Another way to put it is it's not for kids.
Oh, that would be Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that's the...
That's the old Batman.
Yeah. I don't know if he's referring to the first Batman movie with Jack Nicholson.
I think it is. It's the first Batman movie. Jack Nicholson. Well, yeah.
And I got to say, it cracks me up that was just on TV recently.
Yeah.
And Junior Dude and I watched it for a little bit. And compared to the Batman Begins, Christopher Nolan Batman Begins, the dark adult version of Batman from the 80s is a cartoon, is a... is a joke. It's, you know, it's still fun. You can still see that CGI has not arrived yet.
Yeah, but compared to Bane,
yeah,
Jack Nicholson's Joker is not dark.
No, he is menacing, and I thought it was a fine movie when I went. I was glad they brought the franchise out of retirement and put it squarely in the middle of sort of taking comic books seriously. Mm-hmm. But it is nothing compared to what has been reissued in the last 10 years or 8 years.
All right, number three.
I think it's a little too long, but I found the plot intriguing, the action inventive, and Cage and Travolta very entertaining as they toy with each other's star personas.
Oh, I liked it, too, on the basis of the performances, more than the action sequences. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed, and we've told the story here, I enjoyed discovering it for myself, I must say, that it kept getting more complicated. Mm-hmm. And as it gets more complicated, it is more intriguing, because you do have enough time. It isn't wall-to-wall noise.
Oh, that's the terrible face-off.
You thought that was a bad movie?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Oh.
I thought the premise was so ludicrous.
Yeah.
That I couldn't, I just couldn't get past the, this is the silliest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This is,
well,
just.
And any plot that depends upon someone, no matter what the technology is, disguising themselves and their wife not knowing it's not them or is them or whatever. You know, anything from Mrs. Doubtfire to Face Off to Shakespeare, your wife is going to know whether it's you or not.
Yeah. And I get what John Woo does.
Yeah.
And I get that he likes to make pretty violent ballets. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I just thought it was such a silly concept that I couldn't.
But John Woo is God.
Okay, yes. Well, he's very good at what he does. But
yes, he is. All right. Number four.
This is a surprising movie. It's violent. It's bloody. It's sadistic. But it is also well acted and directed. It is R-rated. Don't go unless you like strong action pictures. But I must say, I did like it.
Yeah, I was rooting for it. I mean, I thought, you know, everyone's talking about it. It's when I saw it a little bit late, and I was not impressed. I don't know why. Other than to say that the action seemed to be pretty much routine. There was a lot of the futuristic stuff on the planet where this guy's come from. And that seemed to me to be just a Rector set toy making. The love story that you talk about actually is kind of nice. And I think that within that little love story is actually a potential for a full-scale film. If it had been about that, I would have enjoyed it a lot more.
Well, the whole paradox, which I won't give away, but the whole paradox of who that guy is and the fact that he and this woman fall in love.
That's nice.
Is poignant.
That would be the Terminator. Although, it's a little misleading. I got to say, the review is a little bit misleading because it's, I thought when I heard the word other planet, I immediately galloped off in, okay, what alien human romances are there out there? There's Starman, Enemy Mine is kind of a bromance that takes place on an alien planet. The Riddick stuff, sort of. So, but yeah, it's Terminator. And, you know, I guess...
I guess Siskel was trying to avoid spoilers, you know, pointing out that it's actually Earth, but...
Or just go read, just go watch Soldier and Demon with a Glass Hand from Outer Limits. And those are the two Harlan Ellison episodes that were ripped off to make this movie.
Yeah, and he sued and won, didn't he?
Sued and won. And he got a small settlement and a little title box at the end of the, either the end of the credits or whatever that says, in grateful appreciation through gritted teeth to the work of Harlan Ellison. Anyway.
All right, number five.
Now, Sylvester Stallone can write wonderful scripts. The first two Rocky pictures are proof. But for years now, he's dropped his pen and turned himself into a creature about as human as a cannon, an international fighting machine who says little and presides over explosions.
Oh, that would be the terrible Judge Dredd.
Yeah, not a great movie.
No, it just, you know, Sylvester Stallone, he got paid a lot. This is roughly when comic books started to become staple material. This is sort of when they started to mine, really seriously mine, science fiction and comic books for material. That's fine. But it was just, it wasn't cooked yet.
Yeah. it didn't grits yet. All right.
Yeah.
Grits ain't cooked yet. Let me see. We're on number six.
As a high-tech thriller, it does its job, but it doesn't have much imagination. Here's a visitor from outer space, after all, and he has about the same taste and personality as Freddy Krueger or any other slasher villain. I wish there had been less violence in this movie and more of the vision of science fiction.
It's easy to compare the two films. The Jungle was a much more interesting place in the original picture than this L.A. We've seen the L.A. Graffiti-sprayed streets before. It's not particularly exciting.
That would be the second Predator movie. I don't know what the name was, but
I think it was called Predator 2.
Okay. Predit Another Day or Predit Harder or something like that. Or, I don't know. Yeah, Predator 2, it was the same aliens in a different environment. Ooh, scary. And then they tried to do the crossover Alien versus Predator, which was just for a very select group of hardcore fanboys.
Yep. That was definitely one of the times when the fanboys got to just determine the plot of a movie.
Yeah.
We want to see this. Okay. All right. Fine. Okay.
I want to see Alien fighting the Captain Kangaroo. Okay. Yeah. Fine. We'll do that. Great.
Number 7.
I know it's fun with William Shatner, and he's kind of campy when you look at that whole crew. But Patrick Stewart raises the tension level. You pay attention to him in a way that you don't pay attention to Shatner's group. And the film looks great. I mean, you're studying the shots. You're looking at the detail. You're marveling at reflections in helmets and glass and all that kind of stuff.
It is a good-looking movie, and Patrick Stewart is very good, too. And I like the tension between him and Alfre Woodard as the Earth Woman, who's kind of the partner of that nutty professor.
Oh, that'd be Star Trek, the one with Zefram Cochrane, with Farmer Hoggett playing Zefram Cochrane with the Borg. That'd be...
It is Star Trek First Contact.
First Contact, First Contact, that's right.
Okay.
You know, they really shouldn't have made Next Generation Star Trek.
Movies.
Oh, they should have
Or
they should have really rethought it, because one of the people who does a really good review of these movies is the same Red Line.
Oh, Red Letter Media?
Red Letter Media. Who just is like, they took all the characters you liked and all the things about it and completely screwed them. They made Jean-Luc Picard this sort of angry, babbling idiot. They made Worf a buffoon. They did all the stuff you like about Star Trek The Next Generation is all the stuff they left out. And they really should have thought long and hard before trying to continue the franchise in that way, because they made it was okay. I went to go see it. It was okay. It was, hey, look, there's the Borg. That's great. Probably was the best of all of them, but it was a ill-considered notion.
All right, and number 8.
The movie takes place at a time in the future when the Earth's ozone layer has been depleted and the planet huddles under some kind of protective shield that's administered by an evil international cartel. The film stars Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert as two immortals from the planet Zeist.
Oh, Lord. Poor Sean Connery. I hope he got paid a lot for this. It's hard for me to say poor Sean Connery about the guy who played James Bond, but the second Highlander movie, whatever that was called.
Highlander 2.
Again, this is before they started adding
Harder to it. Right, the colon.
High Harder, Land Harder, whatever.
Highlander Harder, yes.
In the end, there could be only one, so everyone's going to die, except for the one guy. Okay, how do you have a sequel to that? Shut up.
Number 9.
Verhoeven's credits include RoboCop and Total Recall, but he lost his way this time with a repetitious shooting gallery of a picture in which alien insects are machine gunned for what seems like hours and hours on end.
Starship Troopers.
Number 10.
Yeah. Peter Verhoeven, Starship Troopers. Yeah, okay.
Number 10.
Cloned along with her memories so that a galactic government could harvest the alien baby in her womb. Something might have been done with that, but instead it became just a series of gruesome shock scenes where time after time an alien leaps out and attacks and gets turned into a puddle of dead goo over and
Absolutely.
Over again.
It is slime, unending slime and explosions, and totally boring.
Oh, it's one of the aliens.
This is one of the ones I didn't like, actually.
Yeah.
The one I didn't like is Alien Resurrection.
Yeah. This is the
just,
one that...
It's really kind of just a gross movie. It's
they
not...
They shouldn't have made it. They should.
Yeah.
They should have talked, I don't know who wrote it, curse me for not knowing, but if you're really going to do this and you're not just going to say, if we throw Sigourney Weaver and a bunch of aliens and Winona Ryder into a ship and have them jump out at each other and kill each other, just spend the extra $20 it would take to hire a science fiction writer to write you some kind of story outline that would make some kind of sense. But as they say, this one paid for the farm.
And well, for the boat or something. Yeah. All right. Hey, thank you, Dogfaced Herman. And
thank you.
We'll be back next week with more Science Fiction University. Thank you, Drift Glass. Everybody have a great week. If anyone skips the meat of the show to actually just listen to Science Fiction University, do let us know that.
Because
that would save us a lot of time.
If that's where, if that's the sweet spot, if that's where the money's coming from, screw the politics. I'll just read aloud from old copies of Hugo Gernsback stories.
Well, I figure in my emeritus years, my podcast is going to be called Bible Bitch.
Yes.
And I'm going to record 3 episodes a year and go on knitting cruises the rest of the time.
So. Yeah. See, on the life insurance that you will get.
On the life insurance. This is assuming. The life insurance companies do not assume that I will outlive you, however.
Don't worry, you will.
Love you, darling.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.